stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin, I've heard all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking.
We're back for segment two of the Nike On Air special series. Welcome back, Moose.
Thank you.
I'm excited to chat again. I know we've had some good feedback through the week about getting this peek behind the curtain. A lot of people envious of the opportunities that you were afforded. A few people firing up over your antics at the soccer, but
few people happy to hear your voice on here, mate. Few people happy that Zach has been moved to the front line. He's off the bench. He's getting a run, and the people are loving it.
Well, I'm a background guy, mate. I'm like one of those extras that just blend into the background.
No, you're doing well.
This week, we're talking about the other theme that was featured over in Paris, which was air. Mm-hmm. And I know when we got the briefing document, there was some information about where Nike was placing air. And it was, their line was athletes win on Nike air. The winning ingredient from track to the court to the pitch, which is evident, like as you've seen over there, like they are dominating in this space. And but the air, like we know of Nike Air, but like what is air and how is it different from what we see in lifestyle shoes now to running shoes? It's come back to running shoes. Where are we at with air?
Yeah, so air is basically an encapsulated cell of air. So the idea is that it's sort of high, it's like a air that's been packed into this little cell. And when we put load on it, it provides a cushioned experience because it's soft. Now, it first got used years ago. I reckon it was maybe 80s, perhaps, that Nike first started using air. Guy came along with a concept. He got knocked back by a ton of companies. Nike took it on, put it in the shoe, and then Phil Knight went out for a run in it and came back, reported back, and said, I think there's something in this, like this air product. This is good. And so it's been a mainstay in Nike shoes for such a long time. You can still see it a lot in the lifestyle range. Like we know that the Air Max series is super popular. We've got like the Vapor Max, which is like a full midsole of air, like a big bubble. It's in a lot of the air lifestyle product. But it has been in running shoes also for such a long time, but it's slightly different product in running shoes. So it's not just full air. It actually has these tensile fibers that sit inside the bag or the unit. I think they really differentiate now. The bags are referred to the non-performance airbags that we find in like the lifestyle product, whereas the Zoom, they call them Air Zoom units, which are the ones that we find in the running shoes especially, but now it's across a lot of their range, like basketball and soccer as well. But yeah, so these little tensile units, they've got the capacity to sort of take load and return load. And you can really see it in the Alphafly. Like that's the first time we've seen that exposed airbag in a running shoe for a very long time. And everyone sort of pushes on the bag just to sort of see what happens. And you can see these little fibers inside, these little columns, and they compress down. And then when you let the bag go, take the pressure off, they pop back. And so the idea is that they return a lot of energy. And they're very resilient, like they don't compress anywhere like a foam compresses. So you can sort of pound them and pound them and pound them. And at the end of your run, they're not feeling flat and dead and smashed up like a foam could be. We've seen them, like, you know, we have customers who come in the store and say, I wear the Nike Zoom. And it's similar in terms of ASICs when someone comes in and says, I use an ASICs gel. because it's referring to the cushion system or some feature of cushioning within the shoe. And what we've seen from ASICS is it always used to be a physical, like visual component, is that you would see gel on the shoe and you'd go, that's an ASICS gel, something or other. But for Nike, because they don't expose the bag, all you have is the name of the shoe with a little bit of writing on the shoe saying Zoom. You didn't quite get like the same sort of like identity as with ASICS, but people still knew it as the Nike Air Zoom Pegasus, the Nike Air Zoom Vomero, Zoom Structure. Back in the day, it was the Zoom Equilon, the Zoom, what was another one back then? We had the Zoom Elite. So there was actually a lot of models that have Zoom, but we just didn't see it. So that's what Air Zoom is, and it's been refined. And actually, like, if we've got an interview with Kathy Gomez later on, and she explains in detail how intricate the differences are of different Air units in the different models of shoe, depending on their purpose.
I mean, doing this, having these chats with you and learning more about we've all known that these Nike are another level with their innovation and the thought processes, but you can see like the level of engineering that is going into footwear and creating running shoes. Like, you can obviously what they're doing, it's just next level. So the differences though, but like, what about foam? So why are they going with the Air instead of foam, or what's different? What are we doing there?
Well, I actually asked that question with Kathy later. She answers it pretty well, is that it's not so much like one or the other. It's more about how you combine the two together to give an optimal result. And so making a shoe purely of Zoom Air might result in a really slappy, heavy kind of experience. Whereas if you make a shoe purely of foam, there's a potential you end up with something that's quite sloppy and spongy and not quite responsive. So it's finding how you optimize each particular material to get what you want from it. So do you want a shoe that's very cushioned and stable? You might use a certain show, like, and they can tweak foams and they can tweak Zoom bags just like they can tweak foam. So in order to get a firmer, more responsive feel from a Zoom bag, they can increase the pressure in the bag. They can change the shape, the thickness, because if you're putting a lot more load into that Zoom bag, it needs to be tougher and firmer. But if you're jogging and you're going slowly or you're walking, then a softer Zoom bag might be a better experience for that particular shoe. So it's not so much a case of one or the other. I think it's more a case of sort of optimizing the combination of the two for the outcome you want for that particular shoe model. And I've seen bad examples of this in the past, like the Vomero 15, that shoe there had an airbag that was way too soft for what it was. And it was through the forefoot and it was too big. So you really felt your foot sink into the bag and it felt like it was totally independent of the foam around it. So I don't feel like it was a very good incorporation of Zoom into a shoe, because it actually felt too artificial and there was just too much differentiation between the foams. So it wasn't a good incorporation. Whereas something like the Alphafly, and especially the Alphafly 3, how they've put those pods underneath the forefoot, they've given a cavity for it to compress, they've put a layer of foam along on top of the pod to stop it from being too slappy. They've increased the surface area, so the pod's just not sort of off hanging off its own on its own little level. It's full contact surface area with the foam. So we're seeing a lot more refinement, I guess, of how they use Zoom Air units in both performance and training product.
All this feedback, you know, they've got this, the Nike Kitchen that you've spoken about. They're obviously just pushing the limits, testing everything, they can. I know we'll probably get to it about some of the feedback they're getting from their professional or elite athletes. But how about the air and the way they're thinking through developing shoes with everyday runners in mind? And I guess this explosion that we've seen in the sport, we're all enjoying, more people involved and more people running. How are they catering for that as well?
Yeah, so I think the study they did on AlphaFly 3 was not just elites. Like, they obviously had big input from the real heavy hitters like Kipchoge. He provides brilliant feedback, and I know they use him as a real test case because he is very intricate in how he can and how he details his feedback. In our store, we actually have these notes, like these A4 pieces of paper, and they're actual Kipchoge's notes that he's written down to give back to the shoe developer to give feedback on the first AlphaFly. And it's like, it's pretty good stuff. And then there's other athletes, like I think Faith Kipyegon, she gave a lot of good feedback. She was instrumental in developing, I think, the new Victory, which she came out and broke world records in last year. But yeah, this AlphaFly 3, this is a shoe that's it's a lot more forgiving for the people. And when I say the people, I mean like anywhere from 2 hours, 30 through to 5 hours, is that it has design features. And I'm going to steal a word from Tony Bignall here, that are a lot more democratic. And so they're not on edge. They're designed to cater for a much more slower cadence and a more of a rear foot strike and a heavier body and more out of perfectly synced the foot strike is. Yeah. So if you take some of those shoes and you put 80 kilo to 100 kilo runner landing on the outside corner of that shoe at 6 minute a K pace, 40K into a marathon, what you're going to, you're going to get a platform that just doesn't handle that. And so what they've done is they've tried to design a shoe that's a little bit more forgiving or democratic, we'll call it, for that athlete. And they got the feedback that they were looking for wasn't just, they did actual physiological testing on how the athlete was recovering after using them, not just on performance. So we focus on looking at, oh, it's a 4% better shoe or it's a 5% better running economy. And we nerd out on those stats, but they're not looking just at that. They're looking at how the athlete recovers the day after using it, or the week after using it, or how they're going, how many Ks they're getting in over an 8 week period doing workouts in that versus doing workouts in other shoes. So they're looking at it from a runner's perspective, not just from a pure scientist's perspective, which is relieving, because that's what runners need. We don't run in a lab. We don't run on treadmills and we don't like run as well as we do in the first 10 minutes of a test on a treadmill than we do at late stage in a marathon. So we're seeing the right stuff from their sports research lab. Like I think it's really easy to get sucked into showing numbers that we can provide to the public really easily, nice clean numbers like the Nike Vaporfly 4%. But in reality, what they're looking at is more realistic stuff and maybe more stuff that's significant to what we need.
Back on just design, aesthetic versus performance. So you obviously amongst some of the designers there, but also the tech. So the two worlds colliding, art versus art and science, I guess, is it, what do you reckon about that? Are they getting it right? Are they because, you know, there's a look good, feel good kind of mantra as well. And I think John might have referenced that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, funnily enough, Sam Kerr, she actually mentioned that in an interview that we did with her. Is it one of the other journalists? They asked the question like, "Oh, how important it is for you to look good or to happy with your style on the field or whatever?" And she said, "Well, she fully trusts that when she feels like she looks good in a boot, she feels good. It gives her an edge if she's feeling like what she's got on her feet is a beautiful product, or if it's stylish, or if she looks good in it, she'll feel like she's got that extra little bit of swagger. But I think you don't want to start compromising function for aesthetics. And one of perhaps like Nike's biggest assets in the past has been like their resources. They've got a crazy amount of people that can influence a shoe, and they're very smart people, and they're all top of their game. But when you get too many chefs in the kitchen, sometimes some things can get pulled the wrong way, and different influences, and we're starting to put spices on things that don't need spices, and it changes the meal. And so that's potentially what may have happened in the past. And it is kind of relieving, because the people that I were talking about were that, like all the people that I talked about, they said that like the purely best functional product is an art of beauty itself. Is it doesn't really need to have lipstick painted on it when it's beautiful already. And the beauty comes from being such an amazing performance-based product, and such a functional product that science has guided, and the shoe designers have sort of put together without having to try to tweak things for the purpose of aesthetics. So it was relieving to hear that.
I mean, I can see how when you get that mix right, it is just, it's gold, because, you know, when you open that box and you look at the shoe, you feel it, you just want to go and run, or you just want to go and race in it. And there is shoes that Nike do that you do actually pick out of the box, and you're just like, okay, I want to get fit and I want to race in these, or I want to run a PB in these. So that
I think Alpha Flight 3 is a classic example of that. Like, is anyone who's put it on in our store trying it and going for a little jog, their eyes light up. Like,
yeah,
it might look good. I mean, who cares? I never see that in someone's eyes when they open the box. I see it when they slip it on their foot. And I see it when they walk around the store, and you can tell in their mind, they're like, this is a fucking game changer. Like, I was in Tony Bignall's office 2019. I had a size 10 Alpha Fly that was sitting there. No one had really seen the Alpha Fly outside of Kipchoge's foot when he did breaking two. Yeah. No one had really seen it much. I put it on my foot and went for a jog down the hallway, and that is the exact same thing I felt then as what I'm seeing in people's eyes when they put Alpha Fly 3 on. It is inspiring. You can just tell their commute. They're just like tweaking their marathon time down in their head. They're like, this is 10 seconds of K right here. Like,
I'm booking that race.
I am moving well already. I got it with Alpha Fly 3 just as I did with Alpha 1. It's pretty special.
Hey, you had a chat with Elliot. We'll get to it a little bit later. We'll play the full chat. It was a pretty good, like a really kind of raw. I guess you've known Elliot for a while now, so you're on that level where you can really dig into the details. But something you touched on, and we could probably chat a little bit about it now, but just the feedback that they're getting from the athletes, and I guess the mix of shoes and how different athletes are responding or finding that they want to go with an Alpha over a Victor over a Vapor or whatever. What was some of your findings from that chat?
Yeah, well, there's some shoes that they nail first go, like the Nike Dragonfly. Like, that shoe they nailed first go, and I don't think anybody had a bad experience in that shoe. That, like, it was just incredible how much it dominated the spike market all around the world. And you would see it on other athletes from other brands, even though they weren't sponsored by them, they would blank it out. And that was the shoe they were choosing. And it's dominated since it first came out, and they used the prototypes 2019 as well. So it's been 5 years basically of just absolutely owning the market. And owning the front end of races. So that didn't need a lot. That took on a couple of new tweaks, mainly just a little bit in the spike placement. We're going to see a bigger move on that later in the year or next year, I think, which Elliot, he kind of alludes to. But something like the Victory came out. It was the first time they'd plugged a Zoom unit in a spike.
Yeah.
And there were, to be honest, sales weren't great in the store. And we even saw athletes like Stewie wearing Dragonfly. We saw Jakob wearing Dragonfly a bit lower down. A lot of athletes who the shoe was kind of aimed at weren't wearing it that much in the races. And so it when you're seeing that as a running yourself, you start to think, oh, maybe that's not quite at the level we want it. But this new Victory, I wish I was still racing on the track, because that's the shoe of the, that was the, my favorite shoe of the entire event, the new Victory. Wow. Yeah. And I don't even run milers. Like I won't even run in the shoe, but I picked that up and I thought this thing is a work of art. Like how the changes they made, the shoe just looks so much smoother, just looks so much more comfortable. Underfoot, it looks a little bit more, we'll call it democratic again. It looks like you can run with like, not, you don't have to be that exact in your foot strike. So for me, Victory 2 was a big update. And I know that like Faith Kipyegon, she was wearing the Dragonfly a lot more than the Victory back when, before the prototypes were made for her. And then she switched to Victory 2 and she broke those world records that she did. And then there was another world record broken last year in the Victory. I don't know which one it was, but I think it was 1,505K in the Victory, three world records down. And so that got a major update. And they were how that shoe actually changed as well is really cool, is looking at the airbag. It's designed to turn the corner with speed. So it's designed to give more stability for an athlete to come off the bend hard and not be worried about what's going on under their foot. So I thought that was a change that the athletes had delivered back to the design team and said, hey, this isn't great. I need to be more confident turning the bend. And we got the changes have come out of that. And it's clearly successful because we're seeing it break those records and we're seeing the athletes using it a lot more.
Yeah, I did hear the stability is a big thing that they've really improved in that area. Mm. And I guess they're just constantly getting feedback from the athletes, but also in the kitchen or also working through all the technology that they can access now to like simulation and just, I don't know, it echoed through a number of the interviews is that they're not putting limits on things. Like they'll try anything and everything and like a bit of the mad scientist hat on and just go with it. So I think obviously the athletes are at Paramount is they want them to perform and they're doing everything possible to get them there to get the best out.
Kind of comes back to that. Kind of comes back to that whole thing about getting it perfect for Paris and wanting the athletes in those shoes for Paris.
Hey, Pegasus 41 and the Pegasus Premium.
Yeah.
These are Pegasus, obviously a legacy, like a iconic shoe. Now the Pegasus Premium, do you want to speak to both of those? Because something we haven't heard of before.
Yeah. So Pegasus, I think if you listen to Shoe Geeks, you'd know that we're not the biggest fans of the Peg 40. We've found it a bit slappy, a little bit lifeless. The fit's not ideal. It feels like a cheap shoe at the moment, and we don't think it really competes with other shoes that it sits next to or around it. But if you, this new model, the Pegasus 41, it almost looks like a bit of an overhaul. It's no longer slappy. They changed their foam. They're using Nike React X now. And so React X is the softer, more compliant foam. So it shouldn't be slappy anymore. It should be a bit more soft and spongy. There's obviously a Zoom bag in the shoe. That's like part of the heritage of Peg. So you've got Zoom bags in there. And it just looks like if you see this was originally designed to come out with a totally different design. So in the previous design, the sidewalls had these big concaves in them, like big splits. But funnily enough, Mark Parker, the last CEO, when it got down to the very last stages of putting that shoe into production, he came in and he said, no, we're not, like, this isn't what we want. I want you to can it. I want you to change the shoe. And so they had to, like, we had orders that were placed early for a shoe, for this model, that got delayed a couple of months because they had to redesign the shoe. So they've changed it. You've got a nice, much, like, and this is something we harp on a lot, is these unstable sidewalls. So I reckon big ups to Mark Parker there, because he got that right. Because now we're seeing in the new version, we have this more bulbous shape underfoot. So it's a lot more stable. And when you soften a shoe by putting that React X in, you have to introduce some degree of stability to stabilize the foot. Otherwise, you're adding instability through softness and you're cutting sidewalls out. It's a bit of a recipe for disaster. And I don't think that accommodates that bigger athlete. Like we've sort of chatted about during these last two episodes, is you need to make the shoe more, I'm going to say it again, democratic for the user. It's my new favorite word in shoes. And so that's what Peg 41 will come out in. It comes out in June 5, I think the release date is. So you can keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
And then Peg Premium is... it's a different shoe. We've never seen it before. They've put a full-length Zoom bag sandwiched between two foams. And the Zoom bag, it isn't just a flat, straight, horizontal bag, which could often be pretty slappy. This is the first time they've been able to shape a Zoom bag to almost like a plate. So it's higher at the back and they're shaping it down towards the forefoot and on a bit of an angle. And so it's a very propulsive type Zoom bag. And we've seen Zoom bags work in shoes before, like Alpha 3 is the clearest, best example of that. I haven't run in the shoe. I got it on my foot just, but I didn't run in it. So I can't fully tell you, but it did feel a little bit more stable than it looks. The Zoom bag is a bit firmer than what I was thinking it might be. So that's, again, promising. This is a shoe that will give a lot more lively type experience than the Pegasus 41. But yeah, we'll
wait and see for that one. Not really a workhorse shoe.
I'm not sure exactly. I don't think it will be. I think we're going to see the Pegasus be your workhorse. And perhaps if you're on very stable surface, then the Peg Premium, like more on like a smooth concrete, rather than sort of running through any type of dirt or trail or off camber, that kind of thing. You're going to need a pretty stable surface for it. Mm-hmm. But we're actually seeing innovate, like we're seeing lines update throughout the Nike range and a little bit of a restructure as well in how they segment their training models, which you can sort of see. You've already got a bit of an idea there. You've got Peg 41 and then you've got Peg Premium that sits up, and then there might be a little name change from Peg Turbo that's coming out later this year. You might get a little bit of a tweak there, which will I can't go too far into that, but we're going to see some clear categories develop within the Nike range.
Yeah, because I think, you know, shoes, I mean, you always had fun with shoes, and more runners are getting into knowing the different opportunities they have and different shoes they can wear for different runs, and having like a Peg Premium in your sort of suite as to like, okay, I'm going to bring this out today for a bit of fun. I know this is going to suit this run. I'll go back to the Peg 41. And then there's just for different days, you might have a different shoe. And I think it's making just running more fun, knowing that you've got these shoes.
Mate, that's 100%. It's that 100%. It's, like, we deserve to have fun. Like, running should be fun and shoes should be fun. And there's not that many ways we can make running fun, realistically. Mm-hmm. Like, running's a very simple sport. We go out, we put one foot in front of the other. There's not a lot of ways that we can change that. We can obviously go to different locations or run on trails or whatever. But in order to do it on your day-to-day run, putting something different underfoot is the way to do it. That's how you can change the experience of the run. And I think that's where Nike is sort of heading in providing different experiences for each run. And you get to select a shoe based on the experience that you want for that particular day.
think that's a good way to wrap it up, mate. And we lead into these final couple of interviews, a couple of grabs you had. Kathy Gomez and Elliot Heath. Do you want to tell us about Kathy?
Yeah, so Kathy, long-time employee at Nike. So she's the vice president of cushioning innovation in Nike. I believe she might have just ended up in another new role, like vice president of, I guess, cushioning innovation. But anyway, her singular job for the past 25 years has been to create the future for Nike, innovating for hundreds of millions of athletes around the world in the process. Currently, Kathy is Nike's vice president of cushioning innovation, where she focuses on progressing the promise of what every athlete feels underfoot, both on and off the field of play. Most recently, Gomez led a revolutionary charge for Nike's most enduring platform, Nike Air, which resulted in new solutions for runners with the Nike Air VaporMax and fresh articulations of Nike Air for lifestyle with the Air Max 270. Gomez's current work involves imagining the next wave of air innovation and design.
Yeah, that is serious expert.
Yeah, she's up there. She's up there at the Nike. Everyone knows who Kathy Gomez is. And then Elliot Heath. So he's global running footwear product manager. So he oversees the racing portfolio across track, field, and road models. Prior to his role in Nike footwear, Elliot was an All-American collegiate middle distance runner and a professional Nike running athlete. He lives in Portland, Oregon, and coaches the Bowman Track Club, one of Nike's premier running clubs. So, yeah, we had Elliot on a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago, and so you've heard from him before. But we talked about Alpha 3 back then. With this time, I bailed him up. He wasn't actually on our list of approved interviews, but I just said to him, I'm like, Elliot, I need to chat to you. Let's go out the front and let's chat spikes if that's all right. And so he was good enough to go with me, and we chatted spikes. And he, I mean, this bloke knows everything, and he details every little difference in the spikes from Victory 2 to Dragonfly 2, and the differences from the first version, which is what the nitty gritties of what our real listeners want to hear about.
Yeah, he did such a good job in explaining the differences, and I'm sure you could have spoken to him and probably did bail him up for the next 3 or 4 hours.
And oh mate, I was an absolute pest there. Those blokes are so glad to see the back of me.
That's so right, we've got you back. We've got to deal
still
with
it. Not enough handlers to keep me away. The handlers were there, and I was just getting around them and still peppering them.
It's been fun, mate. It's been very educational from my side as well, hearing what Nike are up to. And yeah, thank you. And I think a lot of listeners will have enjoyed these couple of segments in hearing what your take on Nike.
Yeah, and obviously massive thank you to Nike for taking us over to Paris and showing us behind the curtains, because it's very helpful for the listeners of this show. They get to hear, but also I get to see what's happening in retail for those guys for the next few years too.
Good stuff, mate.
The main thing that I'm really curious to ask you about is, for a lot of like recreational and professional athletes as well, style is just as important as performance. Obviously, Nike is so big on innovation, but also you make cool stuff that people want to wear. How do you like consider that balance between fashion and style when working on your big footwear innovations?
Yeah, so I honestly don't really separate style from performance. I think they are, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. And so in innovation, it's true, like we're really focused on making better product. And fundamentally, I believe if we are pure and it works and we design it to function, it's inherently beautiful and intuitive, which is amazing. And at the same time, you know, our teams are very connected to what's happening in the world, what people care about, what they're paying attention to. And you know, that influences aesthetics as well. Right, so it's critical that people are attracted to what they're wearing and they feel good in it, because that's part of performance. Looking good is part of performance, and so it is important. But I believe and see all the time that, you know, fundamentally, if it works, it's inherently beautiful.
Yeah, and do you think that, like, that's kind of going to be something we see more of in Paris, particularly like the fashion capital of the world? Do you think that there's going to be more emphasis on style and fashion from an athlete's perspective?
I think we're just seeing that in general. Yeah. I think we're seeing more and more expression from athletes. They're getting so much attention, which is incredible, and they're really expressing themselves. And I think that it feels like a natural progression, and it's so amazing to see them here in Paris because, you know, of course, it's a fashion capital. But I think it's just a natural progression of things you know, they're paying attention to their style more and taking risk and being bold and showing their own personality through their style.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
It's really fun. Yeah. And so I guess, like, for the designers, you know, it's obviously a big part of Nike's, like, listening to athletes. Mm-hmm. Is that something that comes up a
Absolutely.
Little bit as well?
It does come up. And again, it's important to understand, like, what they care about for us, you know, on their bodies. But we have to understand them as humans, you know, what they listen to, what they eat for breakfast, you know, what they like, what they don't like. And you know, style always comes up. Textures, colors, and so that's always been a part of the conversation. And you know, apply it thoughtfully so that it feels really meaningful to them, I think it's all part of helping them perform better.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, sure.
I'll hand over.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe a bit more nerdy.
Okay, great. Let's nerd out.
So the like the big innovation in footwear is foam. Mm-hmm. Over the last mm-hmm. 5 years, it's
yep.
like an arms war. Who can get the best foam?
Yeah.
We've seen ASICS move away from their icon, which is gel, mm-hmm. and have a lot of success with doing that. Nike's gone back to Zoom Air.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the place for Zoom Air when the foams are getting so much better?
Yeah, it is amazing to see how soft and responsive the foams are, and even like the palette changes, right? Meaning that, you know, 10 years ago, like, soft wasn't really a thing, mm. right? So it's amazing to see. And the way resiliency works, right? You have to deflect it to reduce that energy loss. Zoom Air is part of the system, right? And, you know, we're lucky to have it, and it is the most resilient part of the system. And so it's really just to our advantage to be able to utilize it. And it's really about how the whole system comes together and how it feels in the end, right? And actually showing Zoom Air, like, making it visible, it helps to understand it, what's in there, right? Because you can see it, but really it unencumbers the technology so it can deflect even more. So it actually is a performance benefit to make it visible in Zoom or Max. And so that whole presentation is really about how it functions. And we obsess what's in the layers of the shoe and how they come together too, what the order of them is and how we connect them together. All of it is obsessed in about performance. And, you know, in the case of the Alphafly 3 or even that Peg Premium that you just saw, it was really about responsiveness, right? So, you know, we tried many iterations of that system to achieve the performance that we were looking for.
Yeah. The Zoom bags, they're not all the same.
Right.
Correct. So how do you tune an airbag for a different purpose, like the Maxfly versus an Alphafly?
Yeah. So the team, we have a very experienced engineering team that works specifically on air soles. And so, you know, they understand the nature of the material and the pressurization of the air sole and how it works. They're highly engineered, they're highly technical, because it's kind of a delicate system, because pressurized, and you know, if you're going to pressurize something, it's going to want to become a ball. So they have to engineer it to the shape that they need for performance. So they think about, you know, whether it's stability in that Zoom basketball shoe or energy loss in reducing energy loss in the Alphafly 3, they're going to tune those air soles to perform for those movements that the athlete needs. And so they can change the material on the outside, right, that encapsulates the TPU. They can change the height of the fabric. they can change the pressure of the air sole, and then they even can change like the way the seam is in the air sole, the two pieces coming together.
Yeah.
And they can engineer it and manipulate it so that it provides some function, whether it's stability or even more resiliency. So it's really a game of like millimeters, to be honest. And an obsession about like every little bit of it matters. And because of the tools that we use, they can really understand deeply like what's happening in there. They use simulation engineering to simulate impact so they can see how the air soles are going to perform, and they can try different iterations of it so they can iterate quickly and very precisely.
Yeah. Okay. Just on that, why doesn't the Dragonfly 2 have an airbag?
That's a good question. Well, I think that, you know, putting an air sole in a spike was kind of a remarkable thing in the first place. And it was one of those things that like instantly worked. It was pretty unbelievable actually, because we sort of were building the AlphaFly prototypes, and we just sort of tried it and threw it in a track spike just as almost like, oh, imagine this. And we made some, and athletes wore it and instantly fell in love with it. Didn't want to give it back. I know we say that a lot, but it's true. I watched it happen. It was incredible. And like they were PRing it almost instantly, and because it was a whole new experience for them, right? To have some protection underfoot and cushion from a spike was really amazing. So it's really about choice, right? So like not everybody loves the same thing. So I think in the track line we want to offer, you know, like some that have Zoom and some that don't. So it's really about like a portfolio that works for different athletes with different perspectives on what they want to feel under their foot.
From the technical running market or the specialty stores, they probably look at like the Zoom Air, or not Zoom Air, but Air as a more of a lifestyle play these days. Will there be a challenge trying to bring that feel back to Zoom Air as a performance?
Yeah. It's really important for us that things work, right? And so we believe in the Peg Premium. We've been using Zoom in our running shoes. We've been using Air in our running shoes since the tailwind. And it's been visible, it's been not visible. It's just sort of like, you know, how it's trended over the decades. And, you know, being able to encapsulate Zoom works. But again, to be able to unencumber it in the AlphaFly, it functions better. It saves weight, and also it allows it to deflect more.
So weight thing. Is a Zoom bag lighter than a piece of air the same? Or a piece of, let's say,
Max.
The current Vomero. That airbag in there, is that lighter than weight that would take up the same cavity?
Not necessarily. So weight is critical, especially when you get into things like AlphaFly, where every gram matters. So, you know, we're always looking to make things lighter. And no, the Zoom air soles have weight to them, obviously. And so we're always looking to take weight out of those. So, no, sometimes you'll add a little bit of weight, but you get it back on the resiliency.
Yeah.
It's like how the system works together, right?
The piece of engineering around the AlphaFly 3, how you've given it the bag room to move, that's pretty incredible. Was there a specific designer engineer that came up with that?
Yep, it was the cushioning engineer with the designer. The designer, you did meet him, Leo Chang. He just got here. He was actually just in Kenya and Ethiopia working with the athletes. Yeah, right. But that was literally like, take some more room away from the air sole to let it deflect, and that's why they did it.
That's pretty special.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Going forward, do you feel like Nike's limited by its attachment to air?
Yeah.
Or is there an opportunity?
Yeah, I don't think we're limited at all, because we care so much about performance and we obsess it. And so we're going to do what works. And, you know, we'll continue to evolve Air, and it continues to work. And we also look at other things, right? And it's about those individual technologies, and it's also about how we combine them together. So I don't see a limitation at all. I see a great future. And I also see, you know, we're super open to other materials or technologies that we can figure out.
What is on the horizon for foam? Like, we've seen ZoomX came out and changed the running world. Is there the next ZoomX?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're always looking for, again, like, reducing weight, better performance, right? And so we're looking at now, like, hey, how can we bring that same kind of performance to lateral sports or in other configurations? Can we make it lighter? Can we make it more resilient? You know, can we make it easier? Can we make it more sustainable? You know, we look at all of those factors and aim to improve. And we're always looking at, within other industries, where else can we find materials? I do think there's a lot of value in thinking about how the system comes together, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you make that foam work even better, maybe with a different kind of componentry, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's not just about that material, it's about how you put it together.
Yeah. And do you have prototypes or foams out there that just aren't commercial yet? Like, and that's been the challenge? Like, they're sitting there and they're magic, but you haven't found a way to commercialize.
We always do.
Yeah.
We always have lots of things we can't make yet.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's part of the innovation process,
right?
Like, for some reason, we just keep coming back to it, and maybe we'll be able to figure it out along the way. Yes.
Cool. Thanks,
Kathy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's really nice to talk to you both.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
You just want me to get into it? Are you good?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I'm sitting here outside the Nike venue with Elliot Heath. Are you a senior product manager? Is that your title?
Yeah. I'm one of the product managers for the Nike running team. So,
well, we have with us the new range of Nike Spikes. So we have here the Nike Dragonfly 2, the Victory 2, and also the Maxfly 2. So the next iteration of the performance range. In Australia, the Dragonfly is on nearly every foot at every meet, and we would really love some insights into what makes the new version different from the older version, Elliot.
Yeah, so the Dragonfly 2, like you said, it is one of the most liked distance spikes ever, not just for, you know, every runner. We track, like, the results of the elites. It was the most worn shoe for athletes winning medals at the Tokyo Games, and then we've just seen it really take off for college, high school runners. It's just been so versatile for athletes running not only like 10,000 all the way down to 1500s, 800s. So really well loved distance shoe. The Dragonfly 2 has a couple key little updates that improve the nuances of the shoe. They basically improve the athlete's control of the shoe without taking away any of the magic of what made the Dragonfly special. So starting with what made it special and what continues to make it special is the full-length ZoomX midsole that goes from all the way in the front, thick in the back. In between or underneath that ZoomX midsole is the full length plate. So this is actually a slight update to the material of the plate. It's an injected material. This is a new PVAX material. It's a little bit lighter, a little bit stiffer and snappier than the previous one. Those are all really good things that you want in a fast track spike. But if you look on the outside, actually, you'll notice that the Dragonfly 1 had 6 pins on the outside, 4 pins on this new one. We did a lot of research and testing into where do we really need those pins to be to give enough traction, but not too much, not overbuild it. Because if you look at the materials that make up a Dragonfly, metal's the heaviest material on the shoe. So when you're removing a receptacle as well as another pin, we're removing the heaviest material on there. Still key placements on it. We know that the Dragonfly is used for not only the flat distances, but also really well loved in the steeplechase. So those positions are kind of offset on the lateral to the medial side for not only the transition of a runner, but also in a key place for the steeplechasers to have grip on the barrier. On top of that, if we look at the upper of the Dragonfly 2, it actually has a little bit of update to the reinforcement or the amount of materials containing the heel. Containment on some of these slightly thicker track spikes is a really important thing to kind of engage the engine of the shoe underneath. And so, this offers a little bit more security to the heel, ultimately making it fit snugger, more confident around the turns and on the straightaways. if you look at the material of the rest of the upper, it's an engineered mesh material, slightly softer and more conforming yarns. So again, the Dragonfly is predominantly used as a long distance spike. If someone describes it as a sock-like fit, both in terms of its softness and its conforming nature, that's the ultimate goal. And so those, that slight changes of yarns, as well as the new engineering areas, or the zonal engineering, gives breathability in some areas, but just a conforming fit overall to basically remove any opportunity of blisters and have it be super comfortable and just disappear on the foot.
The Dragonfly 2 Elite, we've seen that sort of mention. Is that coming to market soon too? And what's the difference?
Yeah, so we'll talk more about the what's coming with the Dragonfly in the future, but the Dragonfly 2 is going to be the shoe that really everyone can have a ton of confidence in. If they love the Dragonfly 1, the Dragonfly 2 is going to be all of that and just a little bit better in terms of stability and energy return. And as we go further into the summer in the coming years, we'll talk about more where the Dragonfly is headed.
In the past, we've seen a lot of even middle distance runners prefer the Dragonfly over the Victory.
Yes.
However, the new Victory looks totally different, looks reimagined. Are you finding that the athletes that you've been testing it with have preferred the Victory over the Dragonfly for the shorter events?
Yeah, so of these spikes and everything, I hate to play favorites, but actually in terms of the updates and kind of the revolutionary nature of all the spikes, the Victory is one that you can point to and pretty easily see, as well as if you get it on your foot, feel the big differences. The Victory, I think, in its first, I like to think of both the Victory and the Maxfly, especially with introducing air into the track for the first time in 2020 and 2021. It was this new engine, a more powerful engine that had ever been put into a spike before. But maybe some of the other details, the suspension of the car basically like wasn't even ready for the power of that engine. And so when you look at the Victory, I think there were some athletes that loved it. If they loved a spike that really kept them on their toes, almost made them have that decision of I'm either on my toes or on my heel, that's the athlete that loved the Victory before. I think that athlete's going to love the new Victory, but all of those athletes that maybe struggled with that a little bit more, wanted a little bit more transition and a little bit more containment in the upper, are going to love the updates to the Victory too. It's going to make it a more versatile spike. So not only 815, but we've seen the fastest three 5Ks ever run in the past year on the women's side were all in the Victory. So two world records and a runner-up finish at Prefontaine Classic. So we're seeing the versatility of the Victory come to life.
Yeah.
Couple of the biggest ways that happens, if you look at the bottom and the engine of the shoe, small detail is just how much foam in the shape of the design connecting the forefoot to the heel. We took inspiration actually from how much people were liking the Dragonfly to follow that shape a little bit more and provide a little bit better transition there. It doesn't take away anything from the aggressiveness, the speed that those kickers love of the Victory, but it really just helps with kind of the dynamic paces. If you're in a tactical race and you need to go slow, you need to go fast, or you're just someone that doesn't hit straight in the forefoot, that slight change is a huge difference in terms of the versatility, the speeds of the Victory. Another thing is just the overall stability of the system. And so on the Victory, as well as the Maxfly, you'll see this update to what we're calling the base of support system. If you look at the bottom of the shoe or you have a chance to put it on your foot, you'll notice that there's a much larger flat platform right underneath the forefoot. That gives a ton of confidence and more stability to athletes, not only on the straightaway, but especially around the turn. We want them to, if they're getting all that power from this new engine back, we want them to feel like they can control it. And that's been one of the biggest unlocks to the Victory and its versatility as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned the upper before.
Yes, yeah, I did. I said it's a thing of beauty. I've never seen anything quite like this. It's so, it just looks strong just from looking and feeling, but there is nothing of it. It's see-through, but these fibers feel like Kevlar.
Yeah, they're not Kevlar, but your descriptions are really close. I mean, this example and this new Atom Knit upper, I think, is an incredible example of the engineers, the programmers, the specific Flyknit designers and really incredibly smart people that we have working on Flyknit in particular. This new Atom Knit upper, it takes a lot more zonality to things. It makes it lightweight, super soft, conforming in the toe box. But again, when you look back to the stability component and wanting it to be really secure, you can provide stability underneath the foot, but a huge component to stability comes from the upper and how much it contains your foot. And you see these containment lines. So these are actually specific cables that go in the midfoot of the shoe that help contain the foot while still being super lightweight and comfortable and soft in the other areas. That's been a huge unlock for the overall fit and consistent fit of the Victory. The Victory 1 could kind of almost like stretch and conform too much to your foot over time. This one stretches, conforms just a little bit, but then it holds that shape really well.
And while we're talking about fit and uppers, there is a lot of focus, and all the sexy stuff is generally underneath the foot. Mm-hmm. But it's no good if you can't fit your foot, if you can't put the shoe on your foot. And so that's what we have loved about the Dragonfly in the past, is that little bit extra width and forgiveness for a track spike.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that we can get so many different feet into a spike, where in the past, unless you had like a nice narrow petite foot, mm-hmm. you would never find them comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, just in general, I think comfort is something where it's not necessarily the main focus of a brief of a track spike, or it's not the top one. Yeah. Everyone's always asking us to go faster, but if we can provide more speed as well as be more comfortable and conforming and fit better, then that's kind of like the best of all worlds. And I think you see that, like you said, the Dragonfly made that happen, and you see that come to life with the Victory as well, and this new Atom Knit upper. It's just, it's soft where you need it, and it's super containing where it needs to be as well. Ultimately, like, an upper should just disappear on your foot. An upper should be something that you forget about almost, that allows you to experience the positives and the energy and the engine of the shoe. And I think that's exactly what the new Victory does.
So if you have, you're a coach yourself, you would have a range of athletes that you coach who are potentially looking at getting a spike.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing a correlation between certain running styles or running types or body shapes and their preference for one of these models over the other?
I think we saw more of that correlation with the Victory 1 and the Dragonfly, where it was like, okay, you're definitely like a total 4-foot runner. I feel more confident you'll be in the Victory as a middle distance runner. Mm. And if you're like anything but that, you're in the Dragonfly. I've seen it go a lot more towards really based on event and the speed demands of that athlete. So like I said, with the slight changes to the Victory and how it's become more versatile for the different speeds, it's a lot more common for basically any 800, 1500, 3K athlete to be like, no, the Victory is my shoe.
Yeah.
I don't have to be just like a 4-foot runner. I can unlock the benefits and the speed of the Victory for those middle distances, regardless of my foot strike. And then for the athlete who's just looking for a little bit more cushion, a little bit less aggressiveness, a little bit more kind of perpetual long motion, that's where, you know, they're more predominantly going to go to the Dragonfly.
Yeah.
And we see that coming to life with someone like Jakob running multiple records last year.
we got
all the sirens, people loving Jakob's world records. But, you know, he set multiple world records last year, but he did it in multiple different shoes. Like he, in the middle distances, he was totally focused on the Victory. And then the longer distances and the 5Ks, that was the Dragonfly.
Yep.
And we see that kind of coming to life with other athletes and how they're choosing their shoes.
Okay. Just quickly, a lot of our listeners are sprinters, but the new Max Fly, it's what we'll see on the feet of the real superstars in Paris.
Yep.
What have you changed from Max Fly 1?
Yeah, so a lot of similarities. If you look at the Max Fly and the Victory, that base of support system, unlocking more stability around the turns and the straightaways, is the biggest change. Obviously, it's built around the engine, and that's the air zoom units, the dual chambered air zoom units underneath that outsole plate and smash in between the carbon fiber full length fly plate. That overall system of speed is what is the game changer or the difference maker for both the Max Fly and the Victory. I think you see the ingenuity of our designers kind of, you know, changing and tweaking certain things between using a similar engine, but changing a few things to make it more specific to the needs of the world's best sprinters in the Max Fly and then the world's best middle distance athletes in the Victory. But I can't say enough about that base of support system. if you're thinking about how fast and how powerful the athletes are running around the turn, they absolutely love the MaxFly One, but if they had one criticism for us, it was like, help me unlock that power that I feel on the straightaways, help me unlock that on the turns. Yeah. And so we've tested with, you know, a lot of the sprinters like Dina and Shakari, who are focused on both the 100 and the 200, as well as someone like Rye Benjamin, who's going, you know, 400 meters super fast, but also over hurdles.
Yeah.
That those demands of stability are super high for them. And we've been able to do that by just designing a flatter zone into the spike, by building up the medial side a little bit, also removing one spike in the middle. That allows for a flatter zone throughout the bottom. Really small details, but actually it's something that you can feel on your foot, or if you even just put the spike on the table and you try to feel how it rocks side to side, you can feel that stability come into life. Again, that's combined with the upper plays a role. It's kind of a dance between provide stability on the bottom, but then also contain the foot on the upper. If you think of like one-to-one fit, that we had slight change in the yarns of this flyweave woven type material. So it hugs the foot one-to-one, but they're also a little bit softer and more conforming. So again, fits like a sock. A woven material is known for its lockout abilities. Seat belts are made out of like woven materials. Yeah. So it's try to conform, but also kind of like constrict you and not make sure, or make sure that you're not moving or stretching too much in it. So that's what you see in the MaxFly. Yeah.
Beautiful selection of shoes. Colorways of fire. So this will be Olympic colorway, will it? Or will this be...
I think you'll see something different as we go throughout the year. This is actually cool. It's called our Blueprint Pack. It's kind of a version of the prototype pack. So like we've had our proto colorways for a long time, and this is a special version of that that reaches back further in Nike's history. The Blueprint, and you see like the dotted on swooshes are play into actually like Bowerman was totally obsessed with the weight of shoes. And he would actually bring a scale around to all the different meetings and really hold people accountable. That's we do that now as part of our teams as well, as making sure that if a material is going on there, it has special use. So he used to actually with a pen dot on a swoosh to see how minimal it could be, and so you see that in all of these, and you see his handwriting on the shoes, and even some of the foot anatomy on the sock liners. So that's the Blueprint Pack that you'll see out this spring and early summer. And then as we go forward into the games and beyond, there'll be more.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah,
Elliot, geez, you nailed that. Doesn't matter if it don't